Welcome to Too Many Podcasts, the podcast about podcasts. Now, podcasting from the Sherpa Chalet on Mount Podcastia, here's your host, Jim, the podcast Sherpa.
Thank you, Mr. Bruce. And hey, everybody, welcome to Too Many Podcasts, the podcast about podcasts. It's me, Jim, the podcast Sherpa. What else were you expecting? Joe Rogan? No, he's a little busy right now. Here we are in another week, and I guess we've got a little bit of a different guest today.
Who's our guest today, Sherpa?
The reason why I wanted to have our guest this week on the show is that he's actually responsible for about 90% of the guests that have been on this podcast for season three and already for what's been recorded for season four. The man is busy. He is unstoppable. He's a machine. What else can I say? He's a good guy, too. He's a friend. His name is Stephen Joyner, and he usually doesn't do interviews, and he said, hey, you know what? I think I want to be on your show. And when the big guy speaks, I respond, of course you can, my friend. So he's our guest today. But you know, before I get to talk to Steve, you know that today's podcast is being brought to you by Audible, where you can get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/Sherpa. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from. Probably a lot more than that. For your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. Okay, we had this little conversation over the phone, so let's pick up the phone and listen in on my conversation with Stephen Joyner. Hello, Rebels. We're here in the conference room at the Sherpa Chalet. I have on the phone, really, the man who made season three possible, for the most part. He is a publicist in Southern California, and he really helped book, I would think, about 99% of the guests that have come to the Sherpa Chalet this season, both in the screening room and for the regular Too Many podcast. And I have names for him. I call him the big guy. I call him the king of the conference call. Most of all, we call him Steve Joyner, and he is right here. And welcome to the show, Steve.
Hi, Jim. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well. Does it feel weird being on this end of the phone now?
It does, it does. I'm not the guy that gets interviewed. I'm the guy that puts these things together. So it's like, you know, yeah, it's totally weird.
I promised my earlier guest that I interviewed, there will be no math involved, so you don't have to worry about that.
Wonderful.
And for anything else, I'm not making any guarantees.
Okay, that's fine, that's fine. No, okay. This is great, Jim. Thank you for having me on your program. We've collaborated a lot, and how long has it been now? At least 3 months, right, Jim? Or has it been longer? I can't remember.
I think, since roughly the beginning of the year, we've been doing work together. So, yeah.
Yeah.
And you certainly got me a lot of work.
Well, everybody loves coming on your program. Yeah, everybody loves coming on your program. And you've been a good guest on some other programs, too. So it's, you know, you did the Fourth Wall podcast with Chris, I believe, right?
No, actually, I didn't do Fourth Wall. I did The Life with Don Smith. I did From Where I Sit with Chris Carter, and I did the Leo Effects with Ray Rumsey so far.
Okay, well, we'll get you on the Fourth Wall with Chris and see. I'm thinking, this is how I talk, folks. This is how I think is the next thing, you know. So, but this is cool. I'm currently in Kansas City right now, Missouri, and I hope all who hear this are well and staying well given the circumstances. It's like the whole world's on restriction, you know. It's like, go to your room and stay there till we tell you to come out, you know. So,
absolutely.
But it's scary. Yeah, it's scary. I compiled a list, Jim, of movies that you should not watch during this time. And, you know, films like The Shining or Outbreak or 12 Monkeys or Diary of Anne Frank. There's a whole list that I put together because anything negative, I mean, this is rough times right now, you know.
So maybe sometimes they should take TV away from us, considering that there are movies like that reflecting reality.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, it's like, you know, I mean, at least we know there will be an end to this one day. But, you know, in the case of Diary of Anne Frank, I was actually in that play when I was in my 20s. But in the case of Diary of Anne Frank, like there was no, I mean, you know, hey, yeah, you hide and hopefully live.
So you originally started in acting. You were a child actor.
Kind of, yeah, I guess so, if you could say it that way. I was always a bizarre kid, and then I grew to be a bizarre man. But no, when I was a kid, it goes back to my mom. So both my parents are gone, and my mom, God rest her soul, back in the early 60s, went to a school in Arcadia, California, and it was called Anokia. And Anokia was a college, girls' college preparatory school. You can see I dropped out. Anyway, and she went to school with like Cecil B. DeMille's granddaughter, Leah Garocher's daughter, Troy Donahue's sister, and so on. So at a very young age, I was watching movies that just kind of predated me. So I'd watch, like, on the weekends when I didn't have school, I'd watch The Late Show, and I'd see, like, the original King Kong from the 30s and so on. And I would watch these things, and then when the credits would roll, I was very intrigued by the people, not just the actors, but the people who helped make it, the cinematographers, the ADs, and so on. So when I was five, there was a casting notice. They were shooting. Do you remember Royal Crown Soda, RC Cola?
Sure.
Okay. They were shooting a commercial over in San Diego, over in Coronado Island, and they needed, you know, extras and stuff. And I was a little blonde-headed kid. They needed, you know, they would get, you know, kids of certain height, hair colors, and ethnicities, and so on. And I appeared in a commercial. And then I enjoyed it because kids are like the greatest actors on earth because it's make believe. They don't know any better. So I did that, and then I went to an acting school. It was done by this woman named Drew Scott, and I was in there with some people who went on to do some stuff, and I did a lot of extra work. So first film I did was a movie called The Devil and Max Devlin, and it was Ellie Gould and Bill Cosby, and it was one of the weirdest Disney films probably ever made. And then I was on an episode of Chips, The A-Team, Simon and Simon, I don't know if you remember that show.
Sure.
And then just did some other stuff. It was just fun. But usually it's you have like one-liners, you're a one-line person, what have you. And then I had, you know, I didn't want to pursue it any more than that because there was a child actor that I met who's passed away. He's long gone. I won't say his name out of respect, but he was very well. He was on a sitcom, and he was a lot older than he appeared. And he was really, really miserable. And I thought to myself at a young age, I'm like, man, that could be because your childhood is robbed, basically. I mean, you get to do something very cool, but you don't grow up normal. So.
Right.
I went back and I started doing theater, and I liked live theater because it was live, you know, it was in the moment, like right now. I mean, we're Kate, but you know, it was live. And yeah, I mean, I enjoyed it. And then I found that I had a knack at putting things together. And after my mother passed away, I joined Facebook and got on social media, and I started reconnecting with people. So that's how I got in contact with people that I had met years ago. And then, as far as the podcast and radio world that I'm now involved in, I'm really good friends with the screenwriter that wrote the motion picture Jaws and the production designer. And there was a guy in Boston about 6 years ago who wanted to interview these men for his podcast. And I didn't know, I really didn't listen to podcasts, so I didn't know what the hell it meant. And I had booked them to appear on his program. And then I found out, well, I kind of got a knack for this, so I started working with up-and-coming people and then, you know, sending people, like I've sent to you, you know?
Sure.
Like Jack and Larry and so on. So that's it, really, in a nutshell. I had no desire to act ever again. I don't think I was even good back then. But I've met some wonderful people, and I think that I've had kind of a Forrest Gump-type life where I've met a lot of great people, And at the end of the day, they're like you and I. They're not gods or anything like that. They've just done some very cool stuff, and it was pop culture and zeitgeist, and then it really made an impression on people our age, you know, and younger too.
All right, if I were to ask you, how many contacts do you have in your phone right now from all of the podcasters and entertainers that you've probably worked with or know personally? What would be a good ballpark figure? If you had to take a shot at it.
Over 300.
Wow.
over 300. I want to say like 340 something.
I'm guessing that might even be low, considering a lot of the people that
know. There's, I have a book, like a log book, I call it, and you're in there, and there's like all the people who, the shows I work with and so on. And in my phone, when I save numbers, I'm horrible at getting rid of some, so I actually have, I still have Gary Shandling's number, and Gary is dead. So it's a lot, and then it's a lot to retain. I need to get an assistant one day, because, and I'm not trying to sound bad, but you and I have had this conversation. We're like, oh, Jim, did you interview someone? So, yes, Steve, I had him on last week. Oh, there you go, early senility kicking in. So it is really like a one-man operation, you know, but I find it enjoyable. I like when, and this is the same thing, I've done this with you and Maddox and some other folks, when I'm able to, like, hey, Jim, I want you to talk to somebody. You know how I do it. I kind of throw it out of, like, nowhere. And then next thing you know, Jim, you've been on the receiving end of this. You're talking to some dude that you used to nerd out on TV, you know, back in the day. So that's kind of always fun. Because you meet them for the first time.
Right.
I've known them a little bit longer, but you meet them for the first time, so it's all cool.
Right. Now keep in mind, too, that what Steve has done for me, he's done for just about everybody else who's been on the show so far. So multiply that by 25. So you can imagine all of the contacts that he's making. And, of course, we're, you know, intersecting at that point, too, where you know, two people who are dealing with you are gonna work together as well. Now you book people at, like, an autograph shows as well, too, right?
Well, not now, but yeah, in the past, I booked older mostly the older talent on autograph shows. There's some older names that I put on there.
Didn't you have a little incident with a beloved actor?
He's not beloved to me, but yes. So I had had, oh God, you want to hear the story, don't you?
Sure.
Oh boy, everybody loves that story. I don't know why, it's creepy. Still gives me nightmares to this day. So there was a comedic actor named Eddie Deason who I had done a lot of stuff with, and Eddie's he had a health scare. He's doing much better now, but he had some surgery. And anyway, so Eddie and I think honestly, and Eddie's probably the one guy who I've done the most with as far as the autograph stuff goes. Eddie was in Greece in 1941 in War Games, and just a lot of he was like a nerd. He played a nerd character in all this stuff. He and I were in Los Angeles at a show, and there was a World War II comedy gig called 1941. It was, and we were sitting by Tim Matheson and Nancy Allen and Susan Boccolini, who was the swimmer in Jaws, who kind of revised her role for 41. Across from us, Mackenzie Phillips and Lou Ferrigno, and then to the left of them, down, it was an aisle, was Stephanie Powers from Hard to Hard and Wolf of Brimley. Stephanie Powers is old. People age, people get older, and Eddie's voice kind of carries, and he's got a very distinct voice, like kind of like Gilbert Gottfried. He says to me, he says, hey, Steve, he says, that the girl from Heart to Heart? I'm like, yeah, Stephanie Powers. And he says, oh God, she looks older. And he said kind of nothing, he wasn't trying to be like it's Eddie. So he's like, well, you know, time really wasn't good to her. So I'm like, basically pointing out that she aged. Next thing we know, we see Wilford Brimley lean back and look at us. And he's got the sunglasses, the eyeglasses are a little bit tinted, and then the hat, and the old man from Florida look, basically.
Mm-hmm.
and he gives us a very cold look, like, you know, the stink eye. And we're like, well, did he hear that? And then he's like, nah, he couldn't hear it. The guy's like 100 years old. And so anyway, about 20 minutes later, he comes walking up. And he's wearing his Tommy Bahama, Hawaiian shirt. He's an old man, you know. He's Wilford Brimley, Cocoon, and Quaker Oats commercials, and diabetes. Yeah, everybody knows Wilford Brimley. And he walks up to us, and Eddie goes to shake his hand. He just looked at him, and he says, looks at both of us. He said, I couldn't help but overhear what you guys had to say. And he says, you might want to rethink your position. And we're like, well, what the hell is he talking about? And he kind of like glances over to Stephanie Powers. And we're like, oh, and I looked at Eddie like, oh man, you've done it now. And he's like, oh, well, I don't know what to say. And the next thing you know, Wilford starts talking about, you know, I spent so many years in the Navy. And we're like, Wilford Brimley's getting gangster on us right now. Like, you know, he's like telling us kind of what a badass he was. We're like, this is weird, Jim, because you can't can't fight Wolf of Brimley. He's old. But yet we're terrified at the same time. We're like, okay. He's like, you know, certain words can... I mean, he gave us a lecture of basically calling us names. Like we're jerks. He walks away, and me and Eddie are like, man, that was absolutely weird. Like, he was like, you know, kind of, you know, posturing a little bit. We're like, Wolford Bellamy, I think, wants to pick a fight with us. I mean, we thought that. We're like, this is too weird. He wanders off. Me and Eddie are talking, and then some people come up, and what they do is they usually kibitz for a minute, and they buy an autograph, and then they take a picture. And we're doing that. And Ed Burns, who sadly passed away a few months ago, but Ed Burns, who was in Greece, was there. And I told Eddie, I'm like, hey, Ed Burns is here. He's like, well, let's go say hi. I said, sure. So we get to go up, and next thing we know, we see Wilford Brimley talking to Ed Burns. And Eddie looks at me, he's like, why don't we wait a little while? And I'm like, why? He says, let's wait for a while, let's wait. It almost became like, let's avoid Wilford Brimley for the rest of the day. And then Eddie got up, and he had to go use the bathroom, and usually they have, like, some kind of security dude, like, or whatever, you know, to walk the town to the bathroom so they don't get approached. And so I guess that you had to have been there to see the humor in it, but we literally thought Wilford Brimley was going to try to jack us up. And I had told the story a bunch of times, and I was on one show not too long ago where I had told the story. It was Ray Rumsey. It was Leo Effect, matter of fact. I went on Leo's thing, and I'm like, well, God rest his soul wherever he is. I thought Wilford Brimley had died. And I'm like, I don't mean to talk ill of the dead. And Ray texts me. He's like, yeah, we're going to have to edit the interview. I'm like, why? He's like, well, the dude's still alive. I'm like, oh, shoot. So I guess the lesson is if you're hanging out with a friend that kind of talks loud, I mean, I it was weird. We thought, you know, don't discount the elderly. And, you know, if Brimley ever hears this, a thousand apologies, man. No harm, no foul. It's all Deason's fault, you know? So.
Yeah, that's weird because you mentioned that. I just got a message on social media that says, I hear Joyner's voice and I'm coming for him and I'm bringing oatmeal.
Oh, Jesus, no, don't tell him. Don't tell him where I'm at, Jim.
I'll be like, who's Joyner? How did you get his name?
Exactly. Never heard him, don't know who he is.
Now,
and then I think the other weirdest thing, if you want to hear a story, not many people get to hear because it's too weird, but it's funny, creepy, weird. Me and Pat, remember Pat Jankowicz?
Sure, he was one of my favorite guests.
Yeah, Patrick and I saw Gary Busey try to fight Jonathan Winters. Picture that. So Gary Busey's a madman. He's legitimately something's up with him. And he was sitting three tables down from Jonathan Winters. And Jonathan Winters was, this was years ago, Jonathan Winters was by the opening where you walk into the convention hall, and he's like, you know, one of the first dudes you see. And it's Jonathan Winters, you know, and the guy was like in his 90s at the time. Not many people were getting Busey's autograph for some reason, I guess out of fear. And Busey walked up to his table and started screaming at him and, like, wanting to fight Jonathan Winters. And they kicked him out of the show.
That is weird, bizarre. Huh?
I also saw Lou Ferrigno and Sam Jones, Flash Gordon, get into a fight one time, a physical fight.
Holy cow.
It's funny because these are grown men, and usually older grown men act like children. But, yeah, no, Busey thought that... that Winters was still in his thunder or whatever. I don't know. I mean, but it's Jonathan Winters. You can't throw in Jonathan Winters. I mean, it's Jonathan Winters. But, yeah, don't tell that to Gary. Gary was scary. So that's some of the misadventures of the autograph shows. Other than that, they're usually pleasant. Whenever I book Carl at, like, the Jaws screenings, you know, they get to meet Carl Gottlieb, the screenwriter, and the screenings are fun. They show the movie, they come out, they meet him. Those are always fun. But the autograph shows, for the most part, they're good. You remember when you had Scotty Schwartz on the program? Scotty books a lot of these shows, so he can handle them. Maybe it's my rookie mistakes of not doing the autograph shows adequately, but Scotty's seen everything and everything under the sun. And Scott's a man. She's a great guy. So, like I said, I've seen some things, and some of these people, that you know, they're just, it's a job to them. You know, they're entertainers, and then some people, they forget it's not 1978 anymore, so it's all different. And you know, whenever you see them, you just got to take it for what it is. But it's enjoyable, and I think the main thing is I've dealt with a lot of personalities. luckily, a lot of the ones I deal with are not prima donnas or not pretentious, as you know. They've all, the ones that've been on your program have loved you. So, yeah, that's my Wilford Brimley fight story right there.
And the celebrities that you've worked with, was there anyone that made you a little starstruck?
Yeah, there were a couple. They weren't really like on screen personalities. Well, Carl Gottlieb definitely was, because Carl wrote my favorite movie, Jaws. Mm-hmm. And another guy from Jaws, Joe Alves. Did you interview Joe? I can't remember.
I did, yes. Yeah, he was very nice. We have to put that show on.
Okay, so. Yeah, Joe Alves actually had me starstruck. Now, Joe Alves, for your listeners, was a production designer, and if you listen to Jim's episode, obviously he interviewed Joe Alves. This guy built sets for, he built the shark for Jaws, he built the sets for Close Encounters, Escape from, like, you know, Jim, his resume is just insane. So yeah, I was a little starstruck because I was also aware that these are the people that were literally in Spielberg's camp at, you know, and it was, yeah, it was, that was a trip. There are a couple of people like that, and then, Bruce Stern, honestly, when I met Bruce Stern, that was interesting. I was a little starstruck. You try to hide it, you know, but inside you become like a kid again. It's like, oh my God, you know, and then, but yeah, so there's been a few.
Now, I noticed that you really had like a good connection with a good portion of the people who were involved with Jaws. I know you knew Carl Gottlieb, you knew...
Jeff Voorhees,
who played the kid who got eaten by the shark. And Richard Dreyfuss?
Voorhees' on-screen mother, Lee Fierro, sadly just passed away a couple days ago.
I did not know that.
She was 91. Mrs. Kentner, yeah. And Jeff has been on your program, I believe, right?
Yes, he has.
Yeah, see, sorry, folks. This is how bad it is, I have to bring you. But I'm alluding now, when you get past this boring interview of people, you can go back and hear Joe Alves and Jeff Voorhees. They make for better interviews. But... It's cool, Jim. You get to meet people that you nerded out on their stuff as a kid, and in some way, movies, as you know, have impacts on people. They have very positive and negative, but usually positive impacts. So to eventually like work with these people, it's surreal sometimes, and I feel like lucky and blessed. I really do. I get to work. It's cool, Jim. It really is.
Sure, and I know Jaws is one of your favorite movies. Do you have any other favorite all-time movies?
I like a movie from the 60s. It's called It's a Mad, 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 Mad World. Do you mm-hmm. know that movie?
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Love that movie.
But those are the people that you come in touch with, too, I'm sure. It makes you wonder about their careers, and then, you know, probably little lights flicker on saying, oh, yeah, this is the actor that did this movie and this movie, and they had a bit part in that movie, and, you know, your memory bank starts to overflow a little bit, I'm sure.
Oh, well, Larry Hankins is a good example of that. You know this. Larry has been in everything. He's that guy. You know, he's that character actor. I'll watch stuff, and he'll pop up, and I'll totally forget that he was in it. Like, for instance, before I traveled to the Midwest, I had watched Plane, Trains, and Automobiles with Steve Martin and late John Candy. And Larry's in that. He's the cab driver. I was like, oh, there's Larry. I totally forget. He'll pop up in movies, and I'll totally blank out on it.
Oh, and he has, like, over 160 acting credits, so, yeah, you're bound to see something that he's been in, considering he's been going from, like, the 60s through today. He's still on Netflix to this day.
He sure is. He's a constant character actor, and he's just popped up in everything. I mean, it's like, when I think of something, there he is. You know, he did it. For him, it's work. You know, we all... It's his life's work, and he's just a journeyman actor.
Absolutely. Yeah, and he was a heck of a nice guy to talk to. He was a lot of fun. I just let him go because he had so many stories.
Yeah, he's a New Yorker like you. He's originally from New York. So yeah, I've met a couple people who, honestly, Joe Alves, I know it sounds weird, but starstruck by him. I'll tell you the two actors I could not stand meeting who I really didn't like, and I have no problem mentioning their names because, well, they're dead.
Okay.
I'm sorry, I don't mean to sound so mean. Robert Culp was a jerk to me. And if you don't know who Robert Culp was, Robert Culp was on a show called The Greatest American Hero. Do you remember that?
Mm-hmm. And I Spy also, wasn't he?
He was, exactly, yes. And Eddie Deez and I both had a Bob Culp experience where Robert Culp, excuse me, where we'd met him. He was also in a movie called Bobcats and Mouse, which I really liked, with Natalie Wood. I mean, it was like the first kind of dirtiest movie I ever saw. I'd met him in 1981, and he was just a nasty little guy. And I Spy, I loved that show, him and Cosby. And he was mean to me as a kid. And then another person was actually David Carradine. Not nice.
Really?
Carradine scared the hell. And Carradine scared the hell. A lot of people, sadly, have had bad run-ins with Carradine. Carradine was a guy that just, you kind of wondered his sanity to begin with. But you know, he's, you know, I said, I don't mean to speak ill of him, but I mean, it was a thing where when I met him, I was well aware that I was, Carradine, he freaked me out. So those were like the two, honestly, that I could say, you know, sad that they're gone, but those were two people that I met that I didn't have good experiences with.
Yeah, I guess that's going to happen. You know,
it's sad. I watched I Spy all the time as a kid. So to meet like him, I mean, to me, that was like, oh, this is awesome. I told him, I love it. He was a jerk. And Carradine just gave me this cold look. Anyway, so sad they're gone, but didn't know him, so it was what it was.
Yeah, and as long as they're not sending Wilford Brimley after you, then I guess we're good too.
I don't want to stay off of Brimley's bad list.
See, don't worry, I won't announce what part of Kansas City you're in, Steve. So we'll keep you safe.
No, please don't. Yeah.
Well, let me see. You've hooked me up with a couple of professional wrestlers. I can have them kind of stand guard if you want.
You know, Jim, life is really too short to be hateful and bitter, and especially in these times when everybody is living on the edge of uncertainty. Life's too short, Jim. Be all pissed off and angry. I mean, people are dying right now. We're in tough times. And losing my brother before all this hell broke loose was very surreal to me. I mean, my brother had an addiction problem, and I miss him. But, you know, it's surreal. And I hope all the people who hear this are staying safe, are being conscious, are practicing social distancing and all that stuff. But, you know, it's just life is a gift. And I felt sad the other day, Jim, because I did a post on Facebook because my mom and my brother and me were very close. My father died years, 1999. But my mom and my brother and me, we would watch films together, and they were I just love them dearly, and they're both gone. And I was thinking, God, with all this quarantine stuff going on, I would be hanging out with them. You know, I'm thinking what I would be doing if they were alive, and they're not. So what I've been advocating a little bit, not that it may happen, I don't know, for people who are under, you know, at home, like you and your wife and everybody else, I think it's a good time to self-reflect on life. That's what I've been doing. You know, if you have a relative that a friend that you maybe are on the outs with, try to make amends if you can. I mean, maybe try to, I don't know, we got time up the yang right now. I mean, the world's on restriction. The world's locked down. And I don't know, by the time this interview airs, I don't know how bad things are going to be, Jim. You and I don't, you know? I mean, we're trying to be a good cheer, but it's tough, my friend.
You know, and I got to say, working with this gentleman here, he has always put a positive spin on everything with when he's meeting people, and he's expanding this network around him, really, where we all have a common tie to you. And there's just nothing but good things that are always said about you, you know, about what being a good person and a good friend. And, you know, a good friend is somebody that has faith in you. And we've never met personally, but you show so much faith in me, and that's always, like, the nicest thing that anybody can do as far as this podcast is concerned.
Oh no, you're cool, Jim. We'll meet in real life. I still got to go back there anyway, one day when all this is normal. But you and I hit it off right off the bat. And there's some shows that I meet, and sometimes they're not as friendly. But you were like cool right out the door, and we got along, and we've had great conversations. And I try to network with people like that, and I put things together. I don't make a fortune doing what I do. No, not at all. But it's really about putting these things together and seeing wonderful things happen. I mean, yeah, I guess I do have a knack of putting people together. I think I might be a good cult leader one day. I could probably be a cult leader. You think? kidding.
I'll say that I knew you when, right?
Jim Jones version. No, I'm kidding. But no, it's great. sometimes it's just kind of, you know, and really, this all was not a thought-out plan for me to be doing what I'm doing now 6 years ago. It all had to do with Jaws and that guy in Boston reaching out to me. I've dealt with some shows that have been, you know, not the kindest folks, but, you know, and there were some personalities clashing, and I sometimes used to think I was overworked and underpaid. Back then I was overworked and never paid. That was kind of the joke, the whole thing. It's cool to see things just sprout up and happen. I know publicists, a lot of them, and they're all wonderful people in their own right. And I know radio show hosts and podcasters, but primarily publicists, who would be like, well, I'm not going to send my client to a show unless there's like 3.2 million listeners. No, they're that narrow-minded. With me, I don't care if you have 100 listeners. I'll send you somebody. But there are people that are that, you know, Jim, they're so into the metrics, and they're so, like Maddox says, you know, they live and die by the numbers. You can't do that. If you go on a show, maybe you might have 100 listeners. Well, you know, it's amazing the attitude and approach that some people will take.
If you're bringing something to those 100 listeners and they're going to enjoy it, then what's wrong with that?
Well, I've seen clients who have gone on shows and they have boasted and had their listenership and their analytics in a couple hundred thousand. I mean, literally, they were. And they go on there and they're like, oh, I went on the show, Steve, and no one bought my book. And then the same person will go on a show with a fraction of that listenership, and they get a book sold. So you never know. It's online, and you never know how your show, Too Many Podcasts, will pop on someone's radar.
We engage who we can.
People are very obsessed with the idea. Podcasters are. A lot of them are obsessed with the idea of, well, I want to be Joe Rogan big. And you got to remember, Joe Rogan didn't start out. I mean, he didn't start out being. He worked. He worked. It takes work, and that's one thing. I'm not going to get preachy or philosophical about this, but there's the generation you and I grew up in was very much cut your own cloth and make something of yourself. But nowadays, I'm not saying about everybody in this generation, but a lot of the younger ones, they want everything right now, instant gratification. They don't realize that you know, things take time. And with Rogan, it took time for him to build, you know, it takes time to make it happen. You can't just plant a rose seed and think you're going to have a dozen roses blooming and all beautiful in 2 days. It doesn't happen. You got to grow. You got to nurture it, and then it becomes what it becomes.
And a lot of the podcasters that have millions of listeners also started quite some time back when podcasting was a little bit new. It wasn't so familiar to the masses, so they really just stayed at it and they built up their numbers. So, you know, they got to a point.
They got in on
where,
the ground floor.
Yeah, so they got to a point where, you know, you have to work to get to that point. You can't just do it overnight. And I know what you mean. That's a perfect analogy when you say that people just, they start a podcast and they think that they're Joe Rogan, so they kind of do his spiel, and it's like, that's not you. Just be yourself. Do a show and that people want to listen to, and then see where it goes from there.
What do you enjoy most about what you do?
I really enjoyed, you know, just talking to people from different walks of life. I've spoken to people from all around the world, and just doing different things. You know, the folks that were, you know, that did movies and TV, it gives you like a very different perspective. I've had people that are in touch with a spiritual side, whether one way or the other, whether it be through religion or even through the paranormal. You know, and I've enjoyed them both. You know, if they can come on the show and just talk, and I don't judge, I give them an opportunity to be heard, and, you know, let people get to know them like they get to know you. You know, you're the guy that we talk to each other at least once a week, so people understand.
Yeah,
if I mention,
yeah,
hey, Steve Joyner, this is the guy. You're listening to him right now.
Well, I'm like an enigma, though. You know, I'm like a ghost. I mean, people may hear the name, but I could walk past them and they wouldn't even know who I am, which is kind of cool. I like that. You know, I'm not in it for, oh, hey, you know, I don't, I'm not in it for that sort of stuff. I'm not trying to impress a woman or any of that shit stuff. I'm happy just being me. I like being a behind the scenes guy. I really do. And it's cool to see it all come together. That's the funnest part of my job right there. Jim, I'd like you to introduce you to so-and-so and have him on your program. Then you do it. And then I hear it. It's like, wow, I helped create that. And really all the main glory goes to you and the other show hosts, because I make the connection and set it up, but you guys are the ones that take on the whole thing and do the interview. I couldn't do what you guys do. I tried doing my own show for about a month and a half. It was horrible. I hated it. So, because I was interviewing people I knew, and it was very hard to pretend like I was just meeting, like Jack, hard to pretend like I'm meeting him for the first time because I've known the guy for years. It's interesting. And what you guys do is really an art form. And I've heard you interview people that not much background. They didn't provide much background. So you're kind of like feeling your way around. And sometimes those are the best. It's cool. You're just making new connections and hopefully offering some entertainment to people and giving them a break from their day. Before all this thing broke out with the virus, there were people, I look at the podcast shows, it's like, I've had a horrible day at work and now I can unwind and hear somebody I grew up with or whatever, somebody that's just on the map. That's cool, Jim.
If you were lucky to bring somebody on who's got that flair for telling a story and they, you know, and they just, you can tell they want to have fun and just say, look, like you said, let me give this a shot. I'll come on your show. And I'm like, absolutely. Why would I not have you on the show? Some of the other guests that people have either heard this season or are going to hear, depending on when your episode airs.
Hopefully my episode will air way down the road and the world will be in a lot better shape by then, you know?
Yeah, I'll keep my fingers crossed for that, Steve.
We got to stay optimistic, Jim. I mean, this is something like no other thing we've ever dealt with as a country, as a world. A lot of you mentioned the autograph shows earlier in this conversation. I had about four that were lined up that are now not happening because of this. You know? So it's scary, Jim. We got to keep going forward and keep our mental health as well as our physical health up. That's really important.
Okay.
That's really all I got because I'm not that great of a guest. But listen, Jim, thank you for all you're doing. Let's keep going. And it's you and the wife stay well. And really thank you for having me on Too Many Podcasts. And I hope people, you know, discover your show and for the loyal listeners, continue to listen to it. As far as me, I'm out there. You can look me up. I have a SJ Network page. And, you know, if you're looking for a shameless promoter, I'm your guy, you know.
And, of course, he comes highly recommended by me. So if you got any other questions, you can email me, too. Steve is fantastic, and he's just done so much for me this season, and I really appreciate that. So thanks a lot for coming on the show,
Steve.
You
got it, Jim. All right. Thanks, Jim.
And now it's time for Sherpa Suggestions.
As I've probably said numerous times, Stephen Joyner makes things easy for me, and for this week's Sherpa Suggestions, there's no exception. What can I recommend? How about the podcasts in the SJ Network, which is s-j-network.com if you want to check out the website. And the shows that are on that network, you have the Coast to Coast Power Hour, In a City Like Yours with Michael Glenmore, MGM, the One Non-Blonde podcast with Kim, the New Realm of the Mist Entertainment, and we just talked to Chris a little while back, Scott Silverman's Happy Hour, a freaking awesome podcast with Anthony and Matt, The Life Radio Show, Don Smith. I was a guest on that show and had a lot of fun with Don. He's great. Best beard in Podcastia, by the way. The Talk 2Q Radio Show. Yes, Quincy, we like him. He's a new guy and he's a lot of fun and really cool. The Theft Mart Podcast, and it's a comedy podcast based on the lives and perspectives of professional retail secret shoppers. The TNTL Podcast, which is trying not to laugh. We talk to those guys, Andy and Brandon. What's Your Effin' Binge? Yes, and they censor themselves on that one. And finally, there's one by a guy I don't know who should really be part of a network, but it's called Too Many Podcasts. Shh, don't tell anybody. So I'm sure that Steve is living to regret that one anyway. Thanks so much for listening to Too Many Podcasts, and a very special thanks to the big guy, Stephen Joyner. I always appreciate all the help that you've given me this season for getting me all of the wonderful guests, and not only for this season, into season 4 as well. We've got a lot recorded already. Wow. Busy guy. If you want to hear the show, just listen on your favorite podcast app. It'll be there. And if you don't have a favorite podcast app or you don't want a favorite podcast app, go to my website, sherpalution.com. All the shows are there. All the Sherpa Sheet selections are there. So you get a look at my thoughts on the shows, and there's some music you can listen to that has absolutely nothing to do with the podcasts, just a little something to do. So next week, if you're listening in real time, is the season 3 finale, and it's a good one, folks. If you've seen The Karate Kid 3, or you've seen General Hospital, or The Bold and the Beautiful, or The Young and the Restless. You may know this actor. His name is Sean Kanan, and he was a wonderful guest. A lot of fun with him. This is in the Sherpa screening room, of course. I think you're really going to enjoy hearing what he has to say. I learned a lot about him. He's a fascinating guy, and hopefully maybe I can have him back on another show one day, just in case he feels like doing another podcast if he's, you know, not too busy. If you want to follow me on social media, like Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter, just go to the word Sherpalution and you will see me and you'll hear my ramblings about the daily goings-on of this teeny tiny podcast. Next week, season finale. Following week, the season 3 wrap-up. The following week after that, yes, it's the debut of season 4, and once again, Hollywood week. You're gonna like it. Hey, Mr. Bruce. That looks like Wilford Brimley over there. You better get him out the door quick before you can show everybody else out. What do you mean he's throwing oatmeal at you? Tell him to stop that. He's going to mess up the Sherpa Chalet. I know you can take care of it, big guy. Viva la Sherpalution.
Thanks for listening to Too Many Podcasts. Please disperse. You can go home now. I said you can go home now. Viva la Sherpalution. Viva la Sherpalution. Yeah, I'll come back now, you hear?